Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I'm doing okay. I would say 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
That's it. That ain't bad.
No.
I mean, it's an F in traditional sort of school grading terminology, but 6 out of 10.
Or a generous D minus.
A generous D. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling about a good 6 right now. And that's better than I think I was last week. And that's, you know, I like that upward momentum. Maybe we could even aspire to a 7 one day. Or a 7.5.
It's going to take a while.
We haven't made in the shade with a 7.5. We hope you're doing even better than that. 8s, 9s, 10s across the board. That's what I want from you, our audience. This is wonderful. It's a show where we talk about things that we like, things that we are into, things that are good, which is, you know, all the more important that we talk about good things in this day and age. Do you have any? What are you looking at? You're gazing down at my...
your strange pose that you've adopted.
I'm crossing my legs and I'm supporting
my... And you've got your torso like 45 degrees.
It's how I like to sit. It's like I'm doing a kind of stretch and I'm engaging my core. Mm. So I guess I'm the asshole for engaging my core. Listen, podcast time is just a... And I think we've been doing this long enough that we can admit it, just a waste of time at this point. So I want to be doing something good. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting that core.
Yeah.
So tight.
Yeah.
When I twist like this and I push the jokes out of my diaphragm, oh, my core gets like a big, like it's stucco down there. It's so firm. Do you have any small wonders?
I'm going to say second day cake.
The second day of cake is traditionally the best day.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a birthday. No big deal.
22 years young.
Stop.
16. No, not 16.
No.
25 years young.
Okay. And Griffin found a way to procure cake in this time, which
yes.
itself was wonderful. But then he got enough cake so that I could have it the day after my birthday as well.
Yeah.
A plus.
It was very good cake from La Patisserie here in town.
Yes.
If you're in Austin, support your local biz.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of supporting your local biz, there's a little mom and pop shop called Taco Bell that I guess is giving out free tacos today. Free,
oh, really?
Doritos Blasted, whatever they're called, tacos.
This won't be applicable to our listeners.
No, it won't. But I celebrate that. I think I mostly celebrate the Doritos Locos Taco. It's my mini one because Doritos are good as hell, and I love these tacos. I have not had one in a long time. From what I understand, they have discontinued the Cooler Ranch one, which was like the shit. but yeah, giving out free tacos is good. Maybe a bad sort of transmission vector, but it's also a transmission vector for good flavors, good Dorito flavors. And I think that's bold and important and special and worth talking about.
It's kind of amazing how Doritos has changed the chip landscape.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot to talk about there. Mm-hmm. Like, you're talking about the hint of lime Tostitos, right? Or any of the hint of lime chips. Like,
yeah.
I feel like the zest on those is getting so strong and so good. And I think it's just because of the bold direction, that the path that Doritos sort of bushwhacked in the flavor jungle for them.
For frontiermen in the chip vector.
Yeah. We love the word vector in this household.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning into that one.
You go first this week.
Oh,
can you begin?
My first thing is, it's a trip back to Quantum Leap.
You're taking us back to Quantum Leap?
Yes.
That's very okay. Not unexpected.
As you'll maybe recall, if you are a devout, wonderful listener, not just that I enjoy Quantum Leap, but also I have discussed it previously on the show, but at that time I discussed a very particular episode of Quantum Leap, which was The Leap Home.
Right.
This time I am discussing in particular when Sam, as played by Scott Bakula, interacts with historical figures.
So like virtually every other episode of the show.
Not entirely true.
Can I guess which one you're going to bring?
No, I'm talking generally.
Generally, when Sam on Quantum Leap interacted with historical... Honey, this is a very, very, very specific, wonderful topic, I believe.
Yeah,
maybe your most specific yet.
There's only like a dozen times that he does it in the like 5-year run of the show.
Can I say my very favorite?
Okay.
Chubby Checker.
Yes.
He invents the twist accidentally, doesn't he?
Oh, no. This was very intentional.
Okay. Fantastic.
That was Sam being like, oh, you know what dance you should do with this song?
is the twist. And that introduces another sort of like conundrum loop, right? Of like, who actually invented, if Sam Beckett goes back in time and teaches Chubby Checker the twist because he learned it from Chubby Checker, who made the damn twist,
right,
though?
Right. This is what I love. This is the kind of stuff that Quantum Leap brings to the table.
Right.
A lot of what I'm going to detail is a very small part of the plot. It's okay. Almost just like a little wink there at the end, usually. I feel like it varies. Sometimes it's incredibly heavy-handed. I'll just start going through them, and you let me know if you want to spend some more time examining a particular one. Because you, at this point, have watched the entire series, right? Or no?
Yeah, I mean, babe, we watched it together. We watched the whole series together, so I don't know how I would have missed a couple there. How does the Chubby Checker teaching him the twist rank in the heavy-handedness sort of department? Because it feels awfully heavy to me.
It is. There's one where he teaches Michael Jackson the moonwalk, and that one's pretty heavy-handed.
Yeah, I would say going back to black performers and then teaching them the dances that they popularized is maybe a little problematic, Quantum Leap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one could argue that the twist would have eventually appeared on its own, right? Because twisting your body is something that you do.
Okay, one would argue that the twist did appear because Chubby Checker invented it.
Well, I'm saying the moonwalk is not something somebody would naturally do just on moving their body.
No, it's almost like a performer would have to sort of choreograph it.
I'm saying I twist my body every day.
I'm twisting my body right now and engaging my frickin' core. Yeah.
There are also examples for in How the Test Was Won, an episode that was supposed to take place in 1956, where Sam helped Buddy Holly write the lyrics to Peggy Sue.
Okay. And maybe he could have given his boy a heads up about a specific airplane that he maybe should not get on board
of. All the things he could have done.
You think he was like, oh, I finally accomplished my mission. Time to leap. Whoa. Oh, shit. Hey, buddy. What? Ah, too late.
In the episode, Buddy Holly was a young boy sitting on a porch singing to a pig he loved and saying the phrase Piggy Sue.
Oh, boy.
At which point Sam said, you know what? You should try Peggy.
So again, like, where did... Okay. This is a Sam Beckett as his own dad level of, like... of the snake eating its tail.
There are also other light ones. There's one, Leap of Faith is the episode. It takes place in 1963, where he teaches a young Sylvester Stallone the plot of Rocky.
What? I do not remember that.
It was a boxing one. It was where he was boxing for like a church for whatever reason, for the nuns as a fundraiser.
God, this show beats ass.
And he was learning how to box, yeah. And there was a young Sylvester Stallone there, and Sam kind of detailed like the great comeback story of Rocky.
Yeah. I feel like you are cautiously inching toward the big one, the big historical.
I mean, okay, you say the big one, and I think I know what you're talking about, but there's also an episode called Starcross that takes place in 1972 where Sam tips off the Watergate break-in.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the big tip. We couldn't have done... So he was Deep Throat? Is that like the...
No. He sees some people in a hotel kind of moving around, and he like makes a call.
Oh, okay.
He's not really thinking, I think, that it's Watergate at the time.
Well, then he's not a very smart man, is he? I guess that's that Swiss cheese brain.
There is one where he performs the Heimlich maneuver before the Heimlich maneuver was invented.
I will say someone would have figured that out on their own.
He is at a restaurant and he saves somebody using that method, and Heimlich happens to be there, and he's like, that's a real good method.
I'm going to steal that. I'm going to make so much money.
And there's one 1964 episode, The Boogeyman, where he meets a young Stephen King, at the time called Stevie King. There's ones where he actually leaps into the historical figure himself.
Okay.
So he leaps into Elvis, leaps into Dr. Ruth.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wowzers.
Which is a complicated episode.
Yeah. to say the least.
And then the one I think that you are referencing where he leaps into Lee Harvey Oswald himself.
Fuck yeah. It's a two-parter. Didn't it win like an Emmy or something like that? Mm-hmm. This episode is shit hot. It is like, that's my like ideal, if I was going to onboard somebody on Quantum. Because I guess there's really not another sort of series sequence like that. But having him jump into Lee Harvey Oswald and having to like complete his mission is some wild shit, man.
Well, and this is one of the ones where they suggest that Sam has changed history considerably.
Right.
Because at the end of that episode, Sam feels very upset that he wasn't able to stop the assassination. And then Al indicates that in the original timeline that Jackie
also killed.
Passes and that Sam has actually saved her.
Yeah.
I just got chills saying that out loud.
I remember the first time I saw it, you watched the whole episode thinking like, how are they going to resolve it? Yeah. Like there's also like a subplot of Lee Harvey Oswald is in the quote unquote waiting room, right?
Yeah. And that's the idea is that when Sam leaps into a body in this show, that the body he has displaced goes into this future waiting room where the like scientific experiment is taking place.
Right.
Typically it's a harmless switch, but Lee Harvey Oswald, I guess, takes a harmful individual.
Yes. Man, those episodes are so wicked good.
Another heavier one is when he leaps into the limousine, or I guess chauffeur driver of Marilyn Monroe.
Oh.
And he is in a position to, I guess, try and save her as well. And then the argument at the end from Al is that he has extended her life, not that he saved her. So yeah, that's another example where there's two circumstances, right? Where like Sam invents something or like teaches the person something, and then like Sam actually like changes history in a significant way. And that the idea that the timeline that we know is actually not the real timeline. It's the timeline that Sam Beckett has created, which I, as a child watching this show, absolutely loved.
Yeah, sure.
Because when you are a kid watching this show, and probably a lot of adults too, you kind of like this idea that this is real.
Right.
You know, and I still kind of think of that, and we still kind of make jokes of that, of like, why haven't I leaped yet? Like this idea that you've done something that is like profound in a person's life, and that was the thing that you were supposed to do.
Yeah. Man, I want to go watch some freaking Quantum Leap, man.
I love it. I know. I love it so much. It is a little cheesy. I mean, a lot of the examples I gave you kind of demonstrate the humor of it, which is always kind of ridiculous and goofy, but oh, so fun.
My first thing this week is a band, a duo called Capsule. And Capsule is an electronica duo from Japan that has been kind of like seminal to that genre. They got started in 1997 when the two members of the group, the producer whose name is Yasutaka Nakata, and the vocalist for the group, and her name is Toshiko Koshijima. They were 17 years old and they met at like some sort of like conference. And since then they have put together 15 albums. So they're like really, really prolific. And their music is for the most part just like super relentlessly upbeat and very like danceable and enjoyable. They're often compared to like Daft Punk in terms of like musical aesthetic. And I don't know a whole lot about like Japanese electronica, despite the fact that this is the second time that I have brought something, including Wednesday Campanella a while back. But I really, really like Capsule a whole lot. And I will go through periods where I don't listen to them for years, and then I will find them again and just go deep down a capsule hole. And I'm currently in the capsule hole right now, and I want to take everybody down with me. I'm going to play a song of theirs real quick for people who've never heard them before. This is off of their 2010 album Player. The track is called I Wish You. So their albums are really successful overseas, but where most of their like attention comes from is that all of their music gets licensed for like theme songs for shows or for commercials. There are talk shows that they their music has been licensed to be the title theme of. There are I'm trying to remember the I have like a list, but it's like dozens of things that they are the theme song for. And I have a really like special memory of this band, and specifically that song we just listened to, which is Rachel and I, our honeymoon in Japan that we went on in 2013, where we had some afternoon where we were just like killing time in Shibuya, and we went into a record store that had like those listening stations. Do you remember this?
Uh-huh.
And we were just like, let's go. I mean, we got like an hour to kill. Let's go just walk around and listen to some music that like we've never really dabbled in those genres before. And that was really fun. And I remember I found a CD of Capsules.
Is that how we found them?
Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, come listen to this. Come check this out. And you listen to it and you're like, oh, that's great. Flash forward like a week or so, and we're staying at this Airbnb in Kyoto, and there's like nothing to do in this Airbnb, like nothing really to do. So we would get back from walking around all these places and just be dead tired and not really have anything to, you know, relax with at home. So I remember there was a CD player in the kitchen that was like the one sort of entertainment device in the whole place. And so we walked to a record store that was like in the base of the Kyoto Tower, and we found this album player by Capsule and brought it home and just like listened to it nonstop. And I think we still have that CD somewhere,
we
right?
We do.
It's like the only CD I've listened to in the past decade or so. So like their music's really upbeat and really nice, and I am drawn to music like that right now specifically, and it like listening to their music now makes me happy, not only on a like the music is happy and it, you know, is upbeat, but it also like makes me remember like a really special time and a really special memory. I can't think of too many other times that I've like sought out music like that. Like we went to that record store like, let's go find a fucking Capsule CD. And it took us a very long time, but we managed to do it. And I remember feeling like, oh, we found this little treasure. And so, like, that album has a very special place in my heart.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't really have much else to say. They haven't dropped an album since 2015, but as far as I can tell...
you if they were still making music.
As far as I can tell, they didn't, like, formally break up or anything like that, but I think this is the longest dry spell that they have, that they've ever had. But yeah, I hope they're just like, you know, working on their magnum opus or something like that. Yeah, their sound is just like really cool, and I enjoy it on a few different levels. I'm gonna play to take us out just another song off that album player that is called Hello. Yeah, that's it. I don't have much else to say, but I feel like we need to say something to pad out while that track fades out before we play the Home Improvement stinger. What do you think it would sound like if Capsule did the Home Improvement singer?
Are you going
to
do that?
I don't know how to do that, man. That would be like pretty tough. No, I'll throw my hat over the fence. I think it would sound a little something like this. Can I steal you away?
Please.
Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie, and just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is, one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast, because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's Electric ebikes.com.
This first personal message is for Samuel, and it is from Kyra. Hi, baby. Just writing to say that I love you every second, and you mean the whole world to me. You're my baby, my angel, my pumpkin, my darling, my sweet and wonderful boy. Thanks for marrying me and always kissing me so sweetly. Love, 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 love you.
Listen, I'm supportive and inclusive of most things these days, I like to think. But I think loving a pumpkin is too much.
Whoa.
I think being in love with a pumpkin is a bridge too far.
Who?
Any gourd, really.
Oh, wow, Griffin.
Yeah, I'll say it. I'm not afraid to say it. This is my, I'm on that Joe Rogan shit right now, telling you the truth. You may not want to hear it, but it's the freaking truth. I don't think you should love a pumpkin. Here's another Jumbotron. This one is for Emily. It is from Beckett. I just pointed out to Rachel that the first one was from, it was for Samuel. This one is from Beckett.
He's out there.
He's out there and he's reaching out and he needs you, Rachel. He needs you right now. Oh boy. Oops. Okay. Well, Beckett says, Happy Hanukkah to my favorite wife, author, and mother to our terrible dog children. I'm so happy you actually married me in September and I can't wait to keep adventuring with you. I love you to the moon and back. Let's get bow and yell about our characters tonight. You're wonderful. So we did screw the pooch on this one. We did beef this one, and we screwed it up, because it's supposed to be around Hanukkah.
Or we're really early?
Or we're extremely early. No, because they say that they got married in September. I have to imagine, unless they have the gift of foresight and saw their marriage going off smoothly here in 6 months or so. But hey, happy Hanukkah. Have a great one.
Yeah. Light some candles.
Light some candles. Do it.
Hi, I'm Dave Hill from Before. And I'm very excited to bring Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident back to Maximum Fun, where it belongs. You can get brand new episodes every Friday on MaximumFun.org, or, you know, wherever. And while my partner Chris Gersbeck and I might lack in specific subject matter on our podcast, we make up for in special effects. Chris, add something cool right here. Also, we have explosions, animal noises, and sometimes even this. Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident, every Friday on Maximum Fun. Chris, do another explosion right here.
What's your second thing?
My second thing is the humble sweat pant.
Sweat pant.
Mm-hmm.
A good friend of mine and yours.
Yes.
And I imagine everyone during these trying times.
I expect at some point that I will feel the desire to get dressed up as if I am to leave the house that day. But so far, that has not been the case. I have spent a lot of time in the sweat pant.
You've been working from home for 2 weeks now.
Yes.
It took me several years of working at home before I worked up this sort of dedication.
Yeah, this has been a really interesting experience for me and Griffin, because for Griffin, his daily routine has changed, but not in the sense that he is, you know, confined to his home while he is working, but it is very different for me. And so I kind of like to check in with him and be like, okay, tell me what the beginning was like.
The beginning was quite bad. For several years working from home, writing for Joystick at AOL, my office was a desk with a laptop on it that was in my bedroom.
Yeah.
And that was up until I lived in Chicago. That was like my setup. And it's hard to work when your bed is like,
well, and then when you right moved there. To Austin, I mean, you didn't really have,
I didn't really
your
have
own
an
office.
Space. Yeah. I forget. Where did I even work? Did I just work on the couch? I
you do worked not in the living room.
Yeah.
Remember, you were watching a lot of Friday Night Lights at the time.
Oh, yeah. That's true. but yes, now I try to take it very seriously because I think that it sort of, you know, helps make it feel normal in a way. But I also think that working in your sweatpants is normal too.
Yeah, I was curious, and I have found a little bit of data out there to suggest that the investment in athleisure has gone up in recent weeks. Specifically, there was a representative for Net-a-Porter, which is a kind of a popular clothing site, mm-hmm. that said that they experienced a 40% uptick in general sweatpants sales in the first week of COVID-19 lockdown.
Good.
Aeropostale recorded a 23% increase in women's sweatpants. Russell Athletic has seen a double-digit increase in searches for sweatpants styles, et cetera. I have noticed that a particular brand that I like has been sold out of many different sizes right now.
Yikes.
So sweatpants, invented in France in the 1920s by Le Coq Sportif.
It took us, amazing name, it took us that long to lock down sweatpants?
Yeah. I mean, it was primarily for athletes.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, this is the era where people wore a hat if they were outside. You know, it was very formal time. You were going to leave the house, you were going to cover your head because everything was to be formal and covered in public.
And also because the clouds are full of mercury, and so you need protection against that.
Mercury?
Yeah, things were different back then.
Okay, what else? What else?
Oh boy, let me tell you, the streetlights would just like, they were fire. It was an oil lamp with fire on it, so you had to wear a hat to protect your hair, didn't you? Because your hair had all manner of old oils massaged into it.
You know, a lot of people did wear a lot of oils in their hair back then.
Because lice was just like a thing you had. Like everyone just had their own sort of lice situation. Mm-hmm. And for the courtesy of others, you would just sort of slop them all down to your head with a thick layer of oil. But boy, howdy, you walk too close to one of those lamps, you're going to have yourself a bad Tuesday.
You're going to be a Joe Pesci in a Home Alone.
You're going to have a real Pesci situation. And you see that movie and you say, that's funny. That's so funny.
That is so funny.
That man's skull and brain are like done. Mm-hmm. My man's head is cooked. Mm-hmm. So just something to keep in mind, old timey people.
So there are a few things that popularized the sweat pant. First, Olympians. They began appearing a lot at the in the Olympics in 1930s. Seeing athletes in sweats was kind of the go-to. It wasn't until the 1980s with films like Rocky. And also icons like Jane Fonda, who kind of popularized this kind of workout culture and the clothes associated with it, which in turn has given us athleisure.
What about a sweat short?
I mean, that is a thing also.
I guess it's kind of the same thing. Rachel has a pair of shorts that used to be sweatpants, but then we cut them off at the knee.
Yeah.
So that, I think we got the pants for a costume to be Artie, the strongest man in the world.
But which, by the way, you're wearing a shirt that would have
worked pretty nicely.
Yeah, Griffin found a pair of red sweatpants that he was going to repurpose as part of the costume. Didn't end up going that direction.
And so Rachel got crafty.
I got crafty.
Cut the legs off.
Just that was where it stopped.
And now, oof, these shorts are. We constantly joke about the sort of like anti-sexiness of them. Uh-huh. They are somehow the least flattering garment that exists maybe on the planet.
So there are a few things that have popularized athleisure. One is the general technological improvements in synthetic fiber, like spandex, which is more durable, washable than natural materials. Also, the modern fixation on healthy appearance. One thing you'll notice a lot with these pants is they make your body look good because you're all tight in there.
Oh.
You're packed in and you're tight.
Oh, is that what people like?
People tend to like that.
I like it loose. And sort of mysterious.
And then also just the more casual appearance that is appropriate now in daily life.
Right.
As I mentioned, you don't have to wear the hat anymore when you go out to the grocery store.
It's a common observation, but boy, howdy, it's true that every day at college, every class, just like everyone had sweatpants on pretty much all the time. I didn't roll like that just because I didn't live on campus. And so for me, it was making a statement. If I left the house and walked down the sidewalk to my car and drove on public roads in my sweatpants.
You still won't really leave the house in a sweatpant, I've noticed.
No.
A lot of times, if you are going to go somewhere, you will change into street clothes.
Well, because if there's a danger or some sort of hazard, I can't negotiate that in sweatpants.
That says a lot about you, Griffin.
It does say a whole lot about me, huh?
There has been a decline in the purchase of denim. recently, but there is a huge increase in athleisure.
Well, it's a direction that I support. I support that direction of the economy.
Yeah, one of the big popularizers for this was Lululemon.
Oh yeah.
And that was in the late 90s, but the phrase or the term athleisure appeared as early as 1979. Which, you know, is kind of what I've been describing, this idea that you can wear workout clothes and they're a little stylish so that you can wear them generally in your day-to-day.
Unless there's, again, a hazard that you must negotiate, and then you're just...
Can you give me an example of, like, a hazard? Where I am wearing the inappropriate pant for this hazard.
I don't want to get arrested in sweatpants, I guess, is what I'm thinking about. Mm. I don't want to have to face some sort of judge in sweat. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What if I get a job interview on the street and I'm dressed in freaking sweatpants?
Yeah.
Or what if you know this is true, the paparazzo.
Well, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I can't... Can you imagine?
But then you'd be stars are just like us, you know?
No, it would be like, look at Griffin. He's given up. He doesn't give a shit. Like, people know me for my fashion,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
You don't see Heidi Klum walking around in sweatpants unless she's doing, like, a really funny Halloween costume.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the expectation that's on me. Is it fair? No. Is it the price that I have to pay for the level of success that I've achieved? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a trade-off that I think is worth it? No. I want to leave the house in sweatpants, but I cannot because of the shutter bugs outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's their shutters going off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, yeah. Even now, they're out there, and they're not supposed to be.
Well, thank you for your service, Griffin.
Yeah, it's another kind of courage. My second thing this week is telekinesis. Telekinesis.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's so dope. It is the superpower I wish I had. When people ask, like, what superpower do you wish you had? If you could have one superpower, for me, it's telekinesis.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are like, oh, I wish I could fly. Most people don't know what they're talking about, because if you had telekinesis, you could just make yourself or anyone else fly. Like, it is the superpower. You can mm-hmm. do so much shit with telekinesis. It's the dream that I have most often. The dream that, like, I can
really?
Move stuff with my... Well, it's like I don't have flying dream. I have a lot of, like, oh, shit, I can move stuff with my mind. And then, like, I achieve a level of, like, fame for that, like, full-blown phenomenon style. And then, like, I have to go out on stage and move some stuff with my mind. And then I can't do it.
Griffin has a shocking number of going out on stage dreams. I guess maybe not so shocking considering your profession, but I like almost never have those dreams, and that's like all
Man,
you
I
have.
That's all I have. So telekinesis is the ability to affect a physical system via non-physical means with your mind. It's also commonly called psychokinesis. Apparently that is the more common name for it. I always call it telekinesis, but I will call it psychokinesis or PK for the remainder of this segment. And people throughout recorded history have, you know, claimed to have these PK powers, you know, especially once magicians started to kind of incorporate that kind of stuff into their
bending the spoon
illusory acts. Well, I mean, you started out more with, like, stuff that read from far away, like, you know, I'm going to make this shit float. And then there were magicians who would say, like, I'm literally able to make shit float. I am unto a god. And that's when people were like, hey, roll it back just a little bit. And honestly, like, people claiming to be psychokinetic ability users led to a huge influx of, like, professional, skeptics, like people who tried to, like, disprove those claims. There is a large community of skeptics that came up around the sort of psychokinetic ability movement. Because in more modern times, the idea of, like, PK abilities has lent itself to people claiming psychic healing powers, which is about the limits of what I find fun about telekinesis.
Yeah.
Parapsychologists, they typically categorize, like, the idea of psychokinetic powers into two camps. The first is macro, which is, like, visible. I'm going to pick that shit up and move it with my mind. And then micro, which you can only track through, you know, you can't see it. So that's stuff like, you know, healing and something called thoughtography, where you, like, project an image into somebody's mind, stuff like that. So I want to talk about macro psychokinesis, because that is a rad, like, fictional concept. Lots of superheroes have it. Jean Grey, Psylocke,
Matilda,
Carrie from Carrie, mm-hmm. Like a lot of characters in Akira, which I don't think you've seen before.
No,
I've made you watch Akira. It's really good. But even when people are using it for bad stuff, like most of the people in Akira, I'm still like, damn, I wish I could move stuff with my mind. So powerful was my desire to move stuff with my mind. I have a lot of vivid memories of elementary school. I was in the safety patrol for a few years, where we would serve as basically like crossing guards. And I would, like, on one of those shifts when nobody was around, like, try to move the flag on the end of my pole with my mind.
Oh,
and sometimes the wind would blow it and I'd be like, look, I did see everyone. See, I am not alone in that desire, because in the 1980s, fucking everyone wanted to move stuff with their minds. And there was a dude whose name was Jack Houck, and he was an engineer at Boeing for 42 years, and then he was like, I want to get cool psychic powers. And so he started to research like psychokinetic abilities and remote viewing and all kinds of like wild shit like that, and then Houck popularized what were called PK parties, where bored adults would get together and just try to ruin silverware with their minds. And it was like a thing. Like, lots of people did this.
Yeah.
And he published a paper about like how to throw a PK party for free, except for some silverware that you're going to ruin. And it's easy to find this. Just search Jack Houck, H-A-U-C-K, PK party, and you can find this document that he circulated and led to this like whole phenomenon. And he explains, like, not everyone at your party is going to be able to do it. And most folks are just going to be able to achieve what he called, quote, kindergarten bending, which is, like, so bonkers. If I was, like, at a party and I bent, like, a spoon a little bit with my mind, and I'd be like, oh, no, that wasn't very far. And not like, holy shit, it's real. It's really happening. This is an excerpt from the document that I think is so fucking funny. After people have bent 4 or 5 pieces of stainless flatware in kindergarten bending, then have them try to buckle the bowl of silver-plated spoons. Do not use knives, because they sometimes break and cut people. Similarly, glass and graphite pencils tend to explode, which are not good for your safety.
This is so precise, and I love it.
I fucking love it.
Just the specificity of, like, we've bent a lot of stuff here at the Institute, and so let me tell you what you should and shouldn't bend.
It goes on and is like, plastic cutlery is good because it's cheap and you can like give it to the kiddos and not have a worry, but he will have people come up to him and be like, I can bend all the metal, but the plastic is, I can't do. And he's like, well, think of it like a radio dial, and on the far left side is the metal spoons and on the far right side is the plastic spoons. And then people come back to me and they're like, I finally bent the plastic spoon. And it's like, listen. A lot of people can be very predatory with stuff like this, and that's not great. But the idea of like the 80s going to a kick-ass like psychokinesis party sounds pretty fucking cool to me.
And just like a big spreadsheet that says, like, what have I bended and what would I like to bend?
Yeah.
Cabbage Patch doll, check. Troll doll, check.
And you're going to have somebody at the party who like bends shit like really good, and then like they go to eat the last jalapeno popper and you are also reaching for the last jalapeno popper, and they just kind of like look at you like scanners and you're like, oh shit, okay, it's yours. It's yours. I don't want any of that shit. You bend my bones inside of my body. No thanks, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, PK. It's neat shit. Hey, can I tell you what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes.
Elizabeth says, my small wonder is the video call site Zoom. Since my girlfriend and I can't see each other in person at school anymore, we have begun to call each other on Zoom. We are both making PowerPoints in the style of your podcast about our big wonders to present to each other using the screen sharing feature of Zoom on Friday, and I'm very excited. I love your podcast, and I hope you're both doing well.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, I learned just this week about... that you can insert digital backgrounds on Zoom, like very easily.
I have
heard
that, but I don't know how to do it.
It's like just in the preferences, and then you like pick the photo you want.
I would love to do that, because that has been at work. That has been our new method, and we're supposed to start having weekly and or bi-weekly meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with a lot of people that are as just about as familiar with it as me.
Yeah.
So I would love to just bring that heat.
That would be really, really
like,
cool.
Like, Rachel, are you on a beach somewhere?
I've been traditionally doing like bootleg Shrek costumes behind me
because
they're some of the scariest images on the internet. Brianna says, my small wonder is the smell of cooking onions, especially at a market or fair. The smell is delicious all the time, but when you don't know what exactly it's coming from, it can be so exciting. Is there a bratwurst stand waiting for me around the corner? A taco truck, a pizza kiosk, so many culinary possibilities.
That is so true. A lot of times Griffin or I will be cooking and that is the first thing you smell and it's just like, oh, something smells good. It's
yeah.
like always onions.
or onions and garlic.
Yeah.
I think I just get excited by that smell because it means some kind of home-cooked food's a-coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the starting pistol for a food race and the finish line is my mouth. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And hey, thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network.
Yeah, thank you so much, Maximum Fun. There are a lot of podcasters out there that are providing special additional content right now. I would encourage you to check it out because it is very endearing and charming and kind of what I love most about the Max Fun family.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, you're doing your best. It's try not to be too hard on yourself right now. You know, try to be on.
One thing Griffin said to me that I found really helpful is he was like, this is the first time, you know, in our lifetime that anybody has ever had to do this. And so, you know, be gentle with yourself as you figure it out, because that's what everybody's doing.
Be gentle. Be tender. Show try a little self tenderness.
Be your own best lover.
Be your. Well, no, yeah, sure. I mean,
yeah,
if that's
I mean,
how
come on.
Yeah, come on. It's
don't be a prude, Griffin.
You don't have to social distance yourself from your stuff, your thing.
No, I'm not going to go that far, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, leave me on your hang now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.